Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is Larry Doyle on bullshit-free solutions to weight loss challenges. This was a really, really enjoyable conversation. Larry has a fantastic approach when it comes to a sustainable and holistic approach to weight loss, fat loss, body composition. Very similar to Paul Dermody, who's been on this podcast several times, very similar to David Young. People who look at goals like weight loss and fat loss, which are quite straightforward goals in the sense that in order to lose body fat or lose weight, you need to be in a calorie deficit. But knowing that isn't enough for most people because of the behavioral aspects, the relationship with food, the lifestyle, stress management, anxiety levels. And we dive into all of that in today's podcast. The one thing I will say is we use the term weight loss and fat loss interchangeably in today's episode. For long-term listeners, that's not going to be a problem. You know my description on both of those. But for those of you who are new to the podcast, fat loss is reducing the amount of fat in your body. Weight loss is reducing the amount of number on the scale. They're not necessarily the same thing. You can lose weight and not lose body fat and vice versa. But for today's episode, we're just going to use those terms interchangeably because of the way the conversation is guided. Some of the things we talk about, the one thing you need to do for weight loss, and Larry has a great view on this about getting support and how to set up a good support network, either with a coach, trainer, or people in your current environment. He also speaks about the importance of your environment with a fat loss or body compositional goal, guilt around food, and how it's linked to a lack of education with a lot of people, and balancing a social life and a weight loss goal and challenging your beliefs around food. But to say they were the only things we talked about would do a complete disservice to this episode because it goes on so many different areas of weight loss, fat loss, body composition, mindset, lifestyle, the tactics that you need to employ, the macro thoughts or mindset approach that you need to bring to your food and to your nutrition. There's loads in this episode. I absolutely loved it. I'm going to be listening back to this one myself. So hopefully you enjoyed as much as I enjoyed recording it. So without further ado, here is today's podcast episode, Larry Doyle on bullshit-free solutions to weight loss challenges. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Larry Doyle. Larry is an online coach, creator of affiliate coaching, and the host of the Gin Pop podcast. He has coached over 2,000 clients online and in person during the last 15 years. His goal is to continue to give clients who work with him the tools and empowerment to achieve high quality, sustainable results. In a world of conflicting opinions and misinformation, his passion is to create real world, bullshit-free solutions to people's challenges. I'm looking forward to talking all things weight loss, body composition, and mindset in general for today's episode. Larry, welcome to the podcast.
Brian, thanks a million. It's so easy when you just get the introduction out of the way for me and I don't have to do it for myself, right?
It's just one of the best things ever about being on a podcast. And for those that aren't subscribed to the Gin Pop podcast, I'll definitely be kind of giving a call to action to that towards the end as well. One of my most enjoyable conversations this year definitely was on when I was on your podcast. So for those who haven't checked that out, I'll link it in the show notes as well. I highly recommend subscribing and following. You have a great interview style and you ask questions that I have never been asked before. So I really enjoyed that. But Larry, just for everybody listening, some people will be familiar with you, some people that have worked with you or will have came across you through even the podcast that I shared as a bonus on mine. But for everyone that hasn't, talk a little bit about yourself. Talk about your kind of your backstory and kind of what got you into the world of PT.
So my backstory, I guess I've been in the industry for 16 years now or so. It's getting a little bit blurry. I'm kind of becoming that old grumpy old man in the corner now at the moment, but about 16 years in the industry, 35. So I've been training since I was like 12, 13, been sneaking into gyms and kind of kicking off my interests from a very, very young age. I would have got into the industry through, I guess, by mistake, but also not by mistake. I was very, very keen into playing rugby and to generally training. Ended up getting some injuries. And it's kind of one of those natural progressions. You're either heavily overweight and you lose a lot of weight, or you get some injuries and you get introduced through a background with sports and stuff like that into the actual industry itself. But came across a fantastic therapist. He pointed me in the direction of a little bit of education. And then I got bit by the education bug. And from, I guess, the age of about 20, I kind of went down the rabbit hole of, you know, further education, upskilling. I didn't go the third level route. I was doing a lot of courses. I was traveling to a lot of education seminars, events and stuff like that. And I guess building a network while I was doing so through different educators and whatnot as well. And I guess that's kind of naturally progressed with working through general leisure centers and gyms and, you know, doing the usual thing, bit of lifeguard for a while and all this crack, and kind of building up my skill set from the outset, being a coach and being a trainer, to progressing to taking a couple of PT clients, to moving to Australia, trying to set up a career out there. Came home 5 weeks later, tail between my legs after a broken relationship. It went to Dublin from my home in Wexford, got a job as a PT in an elite studio up there. And then kind of the natural progression from that is I started to go out on my own and become self-employed about 8 years ago now. And I kind of diversified that a little bit more, a bit of a natural progression, got very busy working in a house in Sandyford, gradually opened up some online slots, and the online eventually took over. And then we're here now, we're after moving back to Wexford, been solely online for the last 3-4 years, and it's just expanding and growing incredibly well at the moment. We've kind of got a very much so more relaxed approach to the whole thing in terms of our coaching, where it would have been, I guess, very intense, dealing with a lot of composition, dealing with a lot of athletes. And now we're kind of, as my podcast name would suggest, the Gen Pop Podcast, we're gone back to dealing with a lot of general people, because I honestly find it more enjoyable. You know, telling someone to take 2 grains of rice out of a Tupperware of chicken and broccoli isn't the most exciting thing, because they're just going to do it in their robots, versus when you're dealing with people that are in the Gen Pop and people who are more normal, without, you know, being disrespectful saying that, they get far more return out of losing 10 pounds and slipping into a new jeans, or kind of feeling much better in themselves, or adding vitality to their life from that perspective. So it's been quite a journey. And we're in a great place now, and I'm kind of really enjoying the current setup that we have with our coaching style.
Yeah, one of the things I'm definitely going to jump back into later is like things you've changed your mind about over the years, because we touched on this a little bit when I was on your podcast about, you know, you said you were the macros guy. And that, as you said, if you're a machine and a competitor or a high-end athlete, that's important, but you change philosophies or systems when you're dealing with different people. I definitely want to jump back into that, because I kind of fall on that school of thought, very similar to myself, a very similar journey. But before we do that, one of the things you're known for online, Larry, and anyone that's mutual friends, as I said before I was on your podcast, like I couldn't believe that was the first time we spoke, because we have so many mutual friends, because like the Irish fitness industry, it's not massive, but you're known for your kind of bullshit free solutions. You're very much known for straight talking, not pulling punches and telling things how it is. So I want to jump straight into misinformation online. And I know you're not a massive consumer of social media, but you work with a lot of people who do consume. What are some of the biggest pet peeves or nutritional misconceptions, or just fitness misconceptions in general, that you see or hear from online with people you're working with?
Yeah, and like you said, I'm a major non-consumer of, you know, certain information. I tend to limit my time massively now at the moment on social media and stuff like that. And like even recently, I've put a limit on my daily use, where I checked it out and it was like 2.5 hours. I was like, oh, shit, I'm not actually making genuine connections with people here if I'm just wasting time over 2.5 hours. Spend a lot of time in DM and stuff, but I was just flicking and scrolling, not really getting anything. So I whittled my time right down. I'm about 50 minutes nowadays, which is really good. But, you know, we get a lot of questions, right? So I do a Q&A every Thursday and I get a lot of questions. And some of the people that will ask questions, you know, you'll get a lot of they say, I heard he said, she said kind of stuff. And I often just reply back and I was like, where did you actually hear this? You know, where does this misinformation come from? Because some of the stuff is just downright dangerous or outlandish or just nonsensical, you know. And to me, and to the likes of yourself, who are more clued in and, you know, we've a lot of a very good common sense approach, it just seems outrageous, some of the stuff, you know. One that was recent, you know, I was asked, you know, does creatine cause hair loss? And so I took up my phone and I Googled, does creatine cause hair loss, just to see what would come up. And holy shit, the amount of information that came up about going bald or like instantly dying when you take creatine was just outrageous. So I could kind of see, you know, where people can get misinformed or, you know, have some poor information delivered to them. Because, you know, when you start dealing with Dr. Google, or if you start self-diagnosing, or if you start going down that rabbit hole, there's an argument for absolutely everything being right and wrong on the internet, you know, and you can go down so many rabbit holes. But I guess as regards of pet peeves of misinformation, you know, it's like, I don't like ragging on certain populations or whatever with it from that side, but it's like, it's the 21-year-old life coach, you know, where they're trying to give experience and whatnot. Like I've been training, I've been lifting weights for 21 years, you know, and that's a lot, you know, there's a lot of 21-year-old personal trainers and life coaches that are out there at the moment, and they're giving their life experience and they're sharing their whole story and whatnot. And listen, there's some fantastic young trainers out there, but you know, you've got to earn your stripes in the trenches. And this is the grumpy old man talking, I guess, from that perspective with it. But the level of misinformation that's coming, particularly targeted, I guess, at young females, it's one that it's a wildfire kind of a section, because, you know, especially now with social media, people are so impressionable. They're targeted directly with, you know, certain types of marketing. There was one, I'm going to have to send you a link for the video. It's hilarious, but it's also incredibly frightening, where there was this lady, I got this email into my inbox, and it was all about keto dieting. And it was like, you know, have to slash carbs and you have to cut back and never eat a carb again. Sugar's the devil, etc. And I clicked into it just to see again, this was kind of where I was trying to look for some of this misinformation. And I got a video link, and there was this middle-aged woman standing in front of the microphone, and she was incredibly sad looking. And she was talking about how, you know, how could he do it to me? How could he leave me? How could he walk away? And it was talking about his husband had left her. And then she just grabbed her love handles and said, "It's because I've gotten fat." And it was just the most outrageous thing. And she started going on the whole sob story about being fat and why, if she knew about keto and all these special diets, that it would have been better and her husband wouldn't have left her. I mean, holy shit, you're really dealing with a lot of emotions when you're digging into people's psychology here with this, you know. And this kind of stuff, I mean, I'm going to go down a rabbit hole on this now and continue rambling on, but it's just such a crazy world, because like we're trying to sell on emotions, we're trying to sell, you know. And I think a lot of people are looking more at marketing tactics as opposed to actual education tactics, and try to pry on the emotions of individuals, making them feel like, you know, that they're really missing out or getting some kind of FOMO, or they're gonna have massive issues if they don't do such an exercise or take such a supplement, or, you know, it's just absolute wildfire from that perspective. And it's such a dangerous world. So this is where we kind of come, you know, both ourselves and myself, it was like we come with a heavy non-bullshit approach, because we just need to cut through the bullshit, because, you know, there's so much of it been given out to people at the moment that we need to be a voice of reason. We need to help people get a little bit more grounded and actually make them realize that they don't have to subscribe to such levels of bullshit, and providing that level of support and, you know, confidence in what we're kind of delivering from that side of it.
I'm just going to park it for a second, Larry, just because I definitely want to get your opinion on and expand and kind of flesh that out, because this is very topical. So we're recording this a couple of weeks early, but it's going out in January. So we're recording in December, but this is going to be everywhere when this podcast goes out. Yeah. And I'm very curious just to park on that, and we can definitely go in a different direction when it comes to the example you use there, keto, grabbing fat, the emotion, the behavioral aspects, so many deep-rooted things to consider when it comes to weight loss and fat loss. But for you as a coach, and you're somebody, and one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on the podcast was because I know how much value people get and will get from this podcast and from your content. But what's the single biggest mistake you see when it comes to people and weight loss in general?
It's jumping from one to the other and not actually spending enough time. Typically, people will start very, very well, and they'll have all the best intentions, and 5 days later something happens, because, you know, we start on a Monday and 5 days later is a Friday. You usually get the weekend that comes in the way, and then it's back to square one on Monday, right? So they don't kind of spend long enough time, as in 3, 4, 5 weeks back to back, of consistent effort and kind of habits. And this is where the biggest downfall is, because they kind of scrap it, go back to square one, scrap it, go back to square one. And each time they take another more drastic approach, because the previous drastic approach didn't work, and they end up just digging a deeper hole, deeper hole, deeper hole. And it's harder to get out of it from that perspective, right? So there's more frustration, there's more confusion, there's more anger, I guess, against the whole thing. So the biggest mistake, I guess, really is one that, you know, really jumping in too fast, too soon, and not spending enough time, but also not spending enough time actually building the foundations of, you know, I would say if you're trying to build a mansion, you're going to have adequate foundations, right? So this is where it's your sleep, it's your stress management, it's your digestion, it's your mood, your mental health, your wellness, your overall energy, your fuel that you're putting in the body. And at no point are we talking about calorie deficit here. We're not talking about energy expenditure steps or anything like that from that perspective. It's actually to increase the quality of all those. And, you know, where they say a rising tide floats all boats, right? So if we start looking at all these different foundational levels, that it's going to level it up and get everything to a much better starting point. Because, you know, you already have people when they're starting a diet or they're starting out on their journey. And, you know, the biggest thing when they're starting out on the journey, they're starting in a place where they're already fatigued. They're already, you know, lacking energy. They're already low mood. They're already in pain, perhaps physically. And then they go make themselves really hungry on top of it by putting in a huge deficit. You know, so this is where getting those foundations in place is the biggest mistake, or not getting those foundations in place is the biggest mistake I see people before they're expanding on their fat loss journeys.
It's so true. I think that approach towards sustainability, I think it's very similar because we have the same outlook in the sense of what can you stick to? There's only a couple of basic principles that you need to follow when it comes to weight loss. As you said, calorie deficit being one of them, but you don't even have to get into that with a lot of people. It's very much a case of cleaning up their nutrition or moving more can put people into that deficit. And as a result, they'll get body compositional change. But I'm curious because I get this all the time, Larry, and you definitely get in your Q&As because I see it on a Thursday, is Mary or John, you know, insert name here, come up to you and go, what's the one thing I need to do to lose weight? What would your response be to that? Would you say taking outside the holistic approach, which I'm all for, would you say focus on your calories, focus on your food choices, focus on your sleep? What would be your response to a question like that?
Well, the number one thing is to get support. Because I was only chatting about this earlier on, like, you know, the second the engine light comes on in our car, we pull into a mechanic. The second my tap gets leaky in the kitchen, I call a plumber. You know, if there's something goes wrong with the electricity, I call an electrician. So why not call in a professional? And this is not like some sleazy upsell to coaching. Go to whoever you want. It's not by me or by Brian's product. It's a case of people should let an actual professional do the professional's job from that side and actually get the speed up the process. Like there's a certain few and a very small minority can really go in, just pick up an online article, take it down, apply it and stick to it rigidly. You know, that's absolutely fine. They're robots. They're not who we deal with because they don't need help. The people who need help or have a lot of frustration or have a lot of previous poor episodes with dieting, they're the ones who need help and from a professional who's got a track record in helping people just like them. So that's the number one thing I would say is to actually get some professional help, get some professional guidance. I was talking about it and Kate came up with an analogy the other day, my partner, and she was like, if you're doing a program on your own, that's like taking a tour yourself, right? Versus getting the tour guide who's going to give you the full experience. They're going to bring you to all the little stops. They're going to tell you the little subtle nuances about each part of the gallery or wherever you're going on the tour. And they're going to tell you each piece of information you need to know. And then they're going to bring you on to the next. And they're going to bring you in the most efficient way around that route that you can get the best experience possible. And this is where coaching comes into it. It's getting the tour guide versus doing the tour on your own. Some people can go around that tour on their own, no problem. But they're going to miss a lot of things. They're going to miss out on a lot of information. They're going to miss out on maybe some critical detours that they may not have known about. Had they had a tour guide, they would have got that and had a far greater experience. So this is it's a really nice analogy that Kate came up with, and I think it's very applicable here.
That's a fantastic analogy. I love that. You mentioned support there being number one, which is a great answer. I couldn't agree more in the way you expanded on it. When the people you're working with, Larry, is there a common struggle that you tend to see, particularly when it comes to weight loss? And when I say common struggle, do you find that people struggle more with the food side, the sleep side, the training side, or is it something just something different completely?
It's, for the most part, their environment, right? If you look at their environment and it's like, that's where they're getting maybe a lot of peer pressure, a lot of friend pressure, pressure from colleagues in work, et cetera. And everyone's going to be a byproduct of their environment, whether it's that, you know, your parents had a very sweet tooth and there was a lot of sweets in the house. Most likely you're going to have a very sweet tooth and, you know, have a lot of sweets in your house and whatnot as well too. Or, you know, that if your dad was a footballer, most likely the sons are going to be footballers. The same thing. If you've got a poor genetic background from that perspective with it or a poor exposure background, Your habits are going to be a byproduct from that. And right now, regardless of where you're at in your journey or who you are, or what you're doing, you're a byproduct of all your current habits and your environments, right? So it's actually to, not to flip the environment on its head, but it's to make people more aware of their environment and the support networks that they have throughout that environment. And that's where someone may need to have a difficult conversation with their spouse to actually say, you know what, I need to take my health into my hands here. Can we maybe change the takeaway we get on the weekend and actually put in a home cooked meal? Could we maybe stop having the second, third, fourth bottle of wine on the weekend and maybe just get one? You know, it's having that level of support network there. It's actually crucial to the process because, you know, as much as you're on a journey on your own, you know, you're going to have an influence from a lot of people. You're going to have an influence from a lot of other people that are there and a lot of other voices. And it's to be able to take control of that and actually control the situation or manage that environment that's going to allow for a far more successful thing. Because if we go and say, okay, let's control sleep, let's lock down the sleep habit, you know, most likely, you know, people might be in a relationship or partners or with their kids or whatever it might be, and they're wanting to watch another episode of Netflix, but then you're the one that's getting up at 5 a.m. now to go to the gym session with your trainer or whatever it may be, but now you're getting an hour less sleep. So it's looking for some kind of compromise. It's looking for some kind of collaboration there from those in your actual support network and your closest and your dearest as well. It's going to be a very, very important factor.
For those that are at this early stages of that journey, it being January, and a lot of people that are either back on a weight loss journey or body composition journey, or are on the very first one, their very first 0-1 journey, would you recommend having that conversation with your support network or your loved ones or the people around you at the get-go? Or is it something that you would try and get them to navigate as they're going along? What would you recommend? Obviously, it's different people, but what have you seen the majority of people or more people have success with, setting it up on the front end before they start, or just navigating through it and kind of course correcting with people and their environment as they go along?
Well, it's having that open conversation, I think, is crucial. And if they're people who are really near and dear to you and really care about you, they're going to support that journey. But if they don't know, or if they're not aware, or you're kind of in a closet dieter per se, that, you know, they're not going to provide that level of support. They're not going to, you know, they're just going to go about their normal day to day. So, you know, maybe it's a case of getting the friends and family in onto your, not to force them in onto your opinions of a health kick or a health buzz, but, you know, January particularly is a great time because we're all kind of jumping on the fat loss bandwagon and there's a lot more people are going to be subjected to that. So it's probably a better time to get support from that part of it. And really to have that conversation from the outset, I think, is crucial, because now you've got clear intentions. You've kind of cleared the air. People know where you're at, as opposed to, you know, you starting your journey and it's 2 weeks in or 3 weeks in and we're all done dry January. And then it's like, oh, you know, crazy February and everyone just goes on the piss again. And you're in your fourth week of your journey and it's kind of a critical stage. But now all your mates and your partners and friends are all going out in the piss in February. And it's like, well, that's going to derail progress because you don't want to become the social recluse. You don't want to step away from that social circle and be alienated. Because this is something that often happens as well, that people get alienated from those environments. And that's not something you want either, because, you know, as humans, we're very social. We crave interaction. We crave that environment as well, too, of having people around. We don't do so well. Some people do quite well on their own, but most people don't do quite well on their own. They need that support network. So I guess having that, you know, open conversation where you can say to your friends or family, listen, let's actually stay in, or let's do a home cooked meal, or let's have that again, that, you know, date night somewhere else or whatever it might be, or that meeting somewhere else. It's going to be absolutely crucial. So I think from the outset, yes, it's a crucial conversation that needs to be had.
Yeah, and I think communicating why you're doing it in the first place can be really useful as well. I think a lot of times when people struggle to support change in their loved ones, it's because they don't know why they're doing it. And if you can communicate that with them, you want to be healthier, you want to feel better, you want to be more confident, whatever it is, that can normally help a lot. Because sometimes when you're trying to make change for the better, again, I've experienced this in other areas of my life, it's easier for it can shine a bit of a light on people who aren't willing to make that change, and as a result you can get that kind of a little bit of negativity or not in support from them. So communicating why you're doing it with them in the first place can kind of be prevention better than cure approach to that. You mentioned there about social circle and balance, and as I said, sustainability, when I think of you and your approach, it's sustainability. Like, it's the first, I think, bullshit-free approach. But I think sustainability in terms of philosophy as a coach, how or what do you recommend for people when they're trying to balance their fitness lifestyle and their social life, and more so to kind of arm them for the months ahead, as you said, where things just kind of press the fuck it button completely in February and they're going on the rails and people are going off on the tear again? What would you say to people, or how do you recommend they balance a fitness lifestyle or their weight loss, fat loss journey with kind of a social life alongside it?
Well, when you take that approach, right, if you take any approach, I'll ask someone, could you do this for longer than 2 weeks? Exactly what I've laid out. And they'll say yes or no. Then I'll say, right, could you do it for 4? Could you do it for 6? Could you do it for 10? Could you do it for 20? And if they can't get past 6 weeks, and I'm asking them to do things that are just beyond their current maybe abilities or current beliefs, there's going to be friction. If we say, okay, how about after 4 weeks we have a night out, but I'm going to educate you that little bit more. I'm going to give you support and kind of awareness of how to make better choices. And then you can remove that friction that little bit more. And it's empowering the individual that they can actually have, you know, that balance. And see, this is the thing, for everyone wants balance, but to have balance, you need to have imbalance as well, right? To that degree. So there's going to be a need to be a level of adherence struck, or kind of a, you see what's negotiable or what's non-negotiable with people in terms of what they're willing to give up or what they're willing to park for a moment in terms of their health and wellness to provide a little bit of a boost and a little bit of a kickstart from that side of it. And then, you know, it's to create that education, right? So the education part of it is absolutely essential. And this is where we're really, really big. We have a lot of background education in what we do with our clients, because without that level of knowing what to do and, you know, how to go about the weekend or how to track a scone or how to have a pizza or how to have a beer and kick back and whatever, it's going to create a lot of friction. And the second that starts to come in, that's when their friends in the support network start calling them a dry shite or start getting them a bit of grief. And this is where they say, well, I can't do that because I can't deal with that level of, you know, again, if friction is the word I'm repeating here all the time, but it's a level of friction coming from their loved ones. But once you can start to actually include it and they'll say, well, you know what, I actually went out and I went down for a stroll on the beach the other day and I had a scone and a coffee afterwards or whatever, and it felt amazing. I didn't feel any guilt about it. That's a huge win for a lot of people. And it sounds so simple for some, but to actually be able to do that and have no guilt, because they've now created a bit of education about how to maybe compensate by pulling back calories a couple of days beforehand, or to, you know, create a little bit of a deficit after the event or whatever. But once they know they have that support and that guidance there, it's absolutely key. And it allows them to create that level of, you know, hashtag balance, for the want of a better word. And but it keeps them on the path that little bit more. Because if I say, okay, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this, they're now focusing on a lot of negatives. There's not too many positives. So if we reinforce, okay, well, you can have this and you can do this, and we start reframing the mindset of what they can have as opposed to what they can't have, now they start changing their thought process and they start looking at all the things they can have, and there's so many positives, as opposed to just focusing on that one big red fuck it button that's going to completely derail the whole weekend. You know, so again, going back to that, education is the biggest part to create that awareness, to create that support and the whole guidance with it.
From your experience, and again, this is a very, there's a multi-layered approach to this question, but just from your experience, Larry, do you find that sometimes, or even in a majority of cases, that guilt can come from a lack of education in people?
Yeah, massively. Now that's, there's so many layers to the onion when you're dealing with guilt and when you're dealing with, you know, low mood after certain events and whatever, because, you know, it might have been striked by, you know, might have been caused by some high level stress incident that happened or whatever from that perspective with it. But the thing is that I'll create an awareness with the individual that you possibly will feel guilty. And I'm not saying, oh, you know, this, a lot of people are advertising guilt-free foods and eat as much as you want and have all the beers on the weekend you want and eat as much pizza till your heart's content and you'll still lose fat. That's bullshit. I can't do that. But if we can create awareness that every time you have an event or every time there's something happens, that we're just going to reduce the reaction to it, maybe reduce the guilt by a touch. And then it's prolonging the events, making them that little bit further apart, and it creates more and more confidence each time. But we can't say that it's ever going to be guilt-free or, you know, whatever. People are always going to be, you know, driven off emotions, and there's going to be a lot of food is obviously driven off emotion a lot of the time in terms of selection and choice that people have. So from that perspective, if you can reduce the level of guilt a touch each time, rather than completely overhauling it. If you can overhaul it, amazing, you know, cool, do that. But like, you know, it's to actually make it that it actually sticks that little bit more and just reduce as you go on and build that confidence, people are going to buy in a lot more because they start to notice the wins. They start to notice that, well, do you know what? It was, I just only felt guilty for maybe a little bit as opposed to completely removing the guilt, you know? And it is a steady process that has to be built up with people from that side of it.
What's your response when somebody comes to you and says, Larry, this food is quote unquote good or this food is quote unquote bad?
I had this conversation during the other week, and we were talking about mince pies, the whole post-Christmas event with mince pies. And, I asked him, like, oh, what's better, mince pie or protein bar? And I said, geez, protein bar, of course, it's got protein in it, and it's low calorie, etc. And then we actually started looking, I pulled up the calories on each, and the mince pie was about 200 calories, but the protein bar was 275 calories. And then they kind of looked at me with the raised eyebrow, and I was like, now which is the good food? Because they were looking at one being higher or lower in calories, or one being better or worse because of higher levels of sugar or whatever it may have been. And I said, technically, if that's, you're looking for fat loss, the mince pie is actually better. So I was just challenging their beliefs that little bit more. And it created this awareness that now I said, well, if I actually know what the calories are like in those foods, or if I create a little bit of education around that, now I can actually factor that in. And maybe I don't have to feel like I need a protein bar because X influencer eats 25 of them a day or whatever it might be, but I can actually have the mince pie and include it into my foods. You know, so this is where it's challenging people's beliefs. And actually, rather than labeling foods, it's to create an awareness around the foods. And if they know that, you know, how to loosely get an idea of what calories are from that perspective, they don't have to scan every barcode they look at. But once you can get that visual and kind of build it into your own internal MyFitnessPal and be aware of it, you can now start looking at foods as just food. And it's very, very simple for us who are, you know, highly educated in it. They say, you know, just eat all the foods you want to be a little bit more flexible, but obviously have, you know, more single ingredient food, but you can include X, Y, and Z. And it's all going to be okay as long as you keep within your calorie target or calorie range and hit your protein, et cetera, et cetera. But once you can create that awareness, now you reduce the stress, you reduce the friction, you reduce the anxiety that people have around food. And it's something I'll still work with. I've people I'm working with for a long time, 2-3 years, and they'll still have certain questions about certain foods being right or wrong, or that they've seen someone talk about a food, or, you know, they'll second guess themselves a little bit. And this is where just having that coach or having that voice of education or a voice of reason in the background can reduce that stress, can reduce that friction and increase the information, but also increase the enjoyment in the journey for the individual. And that's a massive, massive part of it as well, is just to be able to answer those questions, but also challenge their beliefs around why they think a food is quote unquote good or bad.
I love that. I think there's going to be a lot of people listening to this podcast who that sentence on the mince pie versus the protein bars is going to challenge their beliefs, because context is key. Like, are you trying to lose weight or are you trying to, you know, improve performance? Like, they're two very different goals, and the food choice are going to lend one or the other in terms of the lower calorie option for weight loss or fat loss. Yeah, it's probably going to be a better option. Again, I know there's so many other moving parts, but just to get that conversation going is very useful, as opposed to just labeling foods as good or bad. Like, one of the things I've said on this podcast, I'm like, food has no morals. I'm like, there is no good food or bad food. Like, context matters, quantity matters. Do you see any other major limiting beliefs when it comes to people, particularly around food?
A major limitation people have around food is actually backing themselves to cook, right? And it's like, to actually try new recipes, to try new meals. And this is going to limit their beliefs that, you know, I've always had this food and, you know, this food made me feel good, so I'm always going to stick to this food forever. And that's not a problem. That's cool. But, like, you know, if we can expand their culinary skills that little bit more, you're going to expand their enjoyment with their food. They're going to now create experiences and memories as well too, as opposed to just adding more food to their MyFitnessPal. And this is where it creates a whole new element and a whole new dimension to it. And something we do a lot with our clients, we create foodie challenges as such, where, you know, some weekends we'll say, okay, here's a raw ingredient. Let's limit it to X amount of calories for a meal, go nuts. And they'll come back and there'll be 25 different interpretations of those different meals and qualities. But now everyone's getting a different idea into recipes and whatnot as well. And it's expanded everyone's culinary awareness, I guess, that you can do so many more things with different foods, as opposed to just sticking to that one turkey burger or one meal or whatever it is, that protes, whatever it might be, that people constantly have as a repetition in their diet. So that's one major limiting belief I think that people have, that, you know, they could really work on that a little bit more. But there's so many more. There's so many more layers to food and so many more layers to their belief. And it comes back to a lot, like, of, you know, how they were raised. And, you know, I was talking about this recently on my stories, and, you know, where certain people were force-fed vegetables as a kid by their parents, or that they were, you know, now they can never see broccoli again, or that they were on this special diet and had nothing but sweet potatoes in, now they can never go on to that again, or whatever it might be. And there's a lot of historical background needs to be taken in and factored into consideration when we're talking to people about certain foods, because, you know, we can show them the science and data, but like there's, you know, then you have the other anecdotal kind of side of it where they've got their own issues and their own history and their own experiences that they've had as well too, that definitely need to be factored into consideration from all points of view with that.
Yeah, that reminds me, I think it's a Yogi Berra quote that in theory and practice is the same, and in practice they're not. That's exactly what I think about when I think of nutrition and people's food, that in theory this is what should work with your macros and your calories, but in practice you have to test it and see what works for you, because there's so many, as you said, multi-layers based on the behavioral aspect, on the history, the genetic component. There's just so many moving parts. So one of the reasons I love chatting to you, Larry, and other people on the podcast, similar, I know you do it on yours as well, is you get to see different viewpoints and different philosophies that arms people with more tools on how they can approach their nutrition, because it's about taking what's going to work best for you, because there is no one size fits all. If there was one diet that worked for everybody, everybody would eat the exact same way and everybody would lose weight or look the way they wanted to look. It's very much a trying to find a square peg in a square hole and find what's a good fit for you. I would definitely wanted to dump, but we touched on this at the start of the podcast, and I've definitely been a victim to this. I've thankfully, over the last few years, I've been a lot more open-minded with my approach to things, particularly with nutrition and fitness in general. I think I was a lot more dogmatic in my early years. I had my opinions, and full hands up here, it was just from a lack of education on my part. Like, it's very easy to confirm your own bias and constantly consume information that supports your belief system, as opposed to looking at other nutritional protocols or looking at different data and looking at different ways of approaching things. And, you know, to the man with the hammer, the whole world looks like a nail. So over the years, I've kind of changed my mind about a lot of my approach to nutrition or fitness. And it's just very similar to you, a lot more holistic now. But what's the biggest thing in either fitness or nutrition that you've changed your mind about in recent years?
Wow, there's so many. That it's far more than sets and reps and macros, right? That was the biggest thing. We used to look at all these things and, you know, I'd get people in and I'd put them through the perfect session, you know, every time. And it'd be, you know, hypercritical on the machine setup and hypercritical on their food setup and analyzing their food diary. But I was never asking the actual questions. How was everything else going outside the other 23 hours? And, you know, up till a couple of years ago, I was really struggling to get results with people. And that was when the penny dropped, that it doesn't matter a shit how good their squat is if they can't stick to their food, if they can't, you know, find that level of balance, or if they can't find that level of adherence, or, you know, to be able to stick to it as a regimented sleep kind of protocol, or if it's looking at stress management, particularly as a big one. Because these are the things that, you know, are going to offset the other 23 hours. And if we're only looking at that 1 hour in the gym, which I was doing, and, you know, it was kind of the level of communication wouldn't have been there. And it's all those things combined now. And it's funny that I actually have less, I've no physical in-person contact time with people, but we're able to get far more greater results. You know, where I was dealing with people very intensely one-on-one training them. And now, you know, we've got people in Brazil who are dropping 10 kilos. We've got people in South Africa that are dropping 15, 20 kilos. We've got, you know, people all around the world who may not even interact with us, but by using the education and the tools that we give them in the background, they're able to drop a massive amount because, you know, we've now educated them around all those things that I was blind to before in the past, by not looking at stress management, by not looking at lifestyle, by not looking at, you know, their environment, their setup and their attitude towards foods and whatnot as well, because training is easy. People will always turn up for training and it's like they'll always do some form of exercise. But again, it's the other 23 hours, I guess, is the biggest thing. And just to come back, like that was the biggest thing, knowing that it was just when the penny dropped that, you know, training wasn't the be all and end all, that it was so much more. And I think we've seen that now over the past months and with 2020 and the lockdown and stuff like that, where people were really limited in terms of what they could do with their exercise, or thought they were limited, I guess, in terms of what they could do with their exercise, that a lot of people didn't have the gym. And we were still able to hammer out results with people because we were looking at all the other lifestyle factors. We were really doubling down on all those during lockdowns. and, you know, people were still able to have massive success. So, you know, that kind of, if anything, 2020 managed to reinforce my thought process a lot that way and kind of solidified that we were moving in the right direction in terms of how we were coaching people, because, you know, we removed the gym. You know, people were training with bands and training with bodyweight at home and stuff. You know, and it's easy for us to say, here's an amazing bodyweight workout, do it at home. Most people weren't even training fully, but we were still, because we were able to kind of hack their lifestyle, if you want to call it that, get huge return, get huge results, and, you know, make lasting impacts on their lifestyles. So that was the biggest thing. And like, we've done so many dumb things with people, you know, obviously to the point of not doing any harm, but like, you know, way back in the day, we would have had, you know, here, take 30 grams of fish oil and make sure you inhale 20 caps of BCAAs in every single session and all this kind of nonsense. And it was like, this stuff just didn't work. And it was all an upsell for supplements in certain places we were working in and whatnot. So, you know, once we started to hack the lifestyle and really look deeper, that's when it really started to crank in terms of getting results for the people we were working with.
When it comes to lifestyle, you've mentioned stress and anxiety several times now. How important is mindset when it comes to weight or fat loss?
Well, it's everything. So you can't work externally till you start working internally. And this is something, again, that, you know, we really start looking at a little bit deeper. And, you know, we haven't been afraid to outsource people to get some counseling, get some therapy, get someone to talk to, because, you know, now as we're dealing with more and more stuff, we're getting exposed to more and more things. People are taking in a lot and a lot more information and a lot more stress and anxiety. And we're dealing with bigger workloads, longer working hours, harder days, you know, bigger bills, everything, all that comes with the real life. And when we start working on the mindset and really start digging in that little bit deeper and get people to have more self-belief, get them to really buy into themselves and, you know, to quieten the other voice, I guess, from that side of it, we really start getting a lot of impactful, kind of powerful movements with people. You're creating this self-belief that they wouldn't have had before. And now they can really start to tap into the physical once they've tapped into the mental. I'm more than aware that as a trainer and as a coach, we have a certain lane that we have to stay within. And we always tell people, stay in your lane. But still at the same time, people are going to come and they're going to open up with, you know, massive amounts of issues or traumas or anxieties or whatever it might be, because we're in a position of trust with them. And we have to give it that due respect and actually help them from that side of it as well. Obviously, while staying in our lane, and if it gets too serious, you know, refer it out, that's no problem. But we can have a massive impact on that. And this is, again, how we're kind of getting that lasting success, because we're reframing how people think. We're, again, giving them that self-belief, giving them that confidence, giving them the knowledge and education in the background. Because, again, you can have the greatest food plan in the world, but it's only on a piece of paper and that's it. You could have the greatest training program in the world, but it's only a piece of paper and that's it. If people won't buy into it, if people haven't got that mindset locked in, they're not going to have that level of success. It's going to be crash and burn every single time.
That reminds me of, I can't remember where I read this first. Ron Nogara definitely said it once playing rugby for Ireland after a game that, you know, knowledge is knowing that tomato is a fruit. No, wisdom is knowing not to put it in a fruit salad. And that's how nutrition is. Like, it's all great having a food plan and knowing exactly what you need to do, but having the right support, having someone like you, Larry, having a good coach or someone that can support you on that journey can tell you that, you know, this is what you're doing right, this is what you're doing wrong, this is how you apply this context or this given situation. And I think that if it was as simple as just getting to a calorie deficit, you wouldn't need personal trainers, you wouldn't need nutritionists for weight loss or fat loss, because all people would do is they'd bang out MyFitnessPal, they'd eat a calorie deficit and they'd lose all the weight they wanted. But there's so many other things to consider. And the mindset, as you said, it's everything. It starts on that point, because you don't necessarily need that much information or education when it comes to basic nutritional principles. You know, there's certain foods that are more calorific than others, certain foods that are more nutrient dense than others, you know, certain calories, certain quantities of calories are going to lead to a surplus, certain quantity of calories are going to lead to a deficit. But it's everything else, as you said, the sleep, the questions you're asking yourself, managing your stress levels, your anxiety, finding what works for you, talking about your history with food, were you forced fed broccoli when you were a kid, like, and having somebody to probe those questions or to make you bring awareness to it, I think is so important. I think that's why, again, it's no secret or it's not a surprise why you're so successful as a coach, because you're taking that holistic approach for people. And Larry, I have only one more question, which is slightly It might be a nutritional one, but it might not be, because I know you're quite a deep thinker anyway. Like, we had a great conversation on your podcast. As I said, I'll link in the show notes for people. Go subscribe and follow it after today's podcast, the Gym Pop podcast. But you think quite deeply in terms of life and mindset in general. And you had a recent post, you put this up in December, it was up in last month's Instagram, about like the ultimate morning routine hack. And it was, you know, have a bulletproof evening routine. That was the answer. But do you have a mantra that you live your life by?
Do I have a mantra? Simplify. I guess just everything. Simplify, right? It's a very, very simple way of looking at it. That if I can look at something and does it add value to my life, yes or no, and it's a very clear cut answer, and I'll veer towards, if it adds value, I'll do that. If it doesn't, I'll remove it. And that goes as simple as simplifying my, I'm saying simple so many times here, simplifying my Instagram, simplifying my social media, simplifying what I'm looking at, what I'm absorbing through my eyes, what I'm putting into my body. Does it add value? Yes or no. Does the training I'm doing, does it add value? Yes or no. And that's something now that I've found, you know, I've gone from years of doing a lot of things and, you know, competing and being very, very progressive and aggressive in my approach to kind of my own physique and stuff like that too. And that was all when I was trying to force it, right? And I was trying to force on muscle, trying to force on body fat, whatever it might have been at the time, that was the goal. And now, you know, as I'm starting to get the hair on the top of my head is growing a little bit shorter and balder and grayer, I'm getting a little bit wiser with each one as well. But that it's now to actually simplify it and peel it all back and look at the actual quality of life. And is it anything I'm doing, is it giving me more quality or less quality? And that's a really simple mantra that I'm kind of applying. And it takes out that decision paralysis, that I don't have to overthink anything too much. I'm thinking about even less. And you say I'm quite a deep thinker. I don't think I'm a deep thinker. I simplify it a lot and just reduce that paralysis by analysis, I guess, and just give myself 2 seconds to think about something. Does it add value, yes or no? And that's my clear-cut answer on what I need to do.
Yeah, that's a kind of a beautiful thing to kind of start wrapping today's podcast up on, because we touched on that when I was on yours, and it was something that I took away from it. As you said, simplify. Just, you know, I've always subscribed to the idea that perfection isn't when there's nothing left to add, it's when there's nothing left to take away. And I think by simplifying your life, that's the approach and the first step towards doing that. Larry, I've loved this conversation. We will definitely, in the next few months or at some stage down the line, we'll do a round two and just have a catch up, because I think there's a lot of different topics we can definitely touch on and talk on. But for everybody listening, can you tell them your final takeaway and where is the best place for them to follow, connect, or check out your content online?
Yeah, so the best place to get me is probably, even though I said that I'm reducing my time on Instagram, but I'm increasing the quality time I spend there. So probably IG is a good spot to get me. So it's Larry_Doyle_coaching. You can obviously check out my podcast, as you mentioned, the Gym Pop podcast, or the rest of my website. It's LarryDoyleCoaching.ie. All good places to get me. But, you know, I'm always open for chats in the DM and whatnot. But, you know, if there's ever anything we can, you know, assist people on or kind of simplify it, or if there's any confusion. And I always say to people, like, that there's no such thing as a stupid question. So always feel free to reach out and touch base and, you know, ask that question that's kind of burning, because a lot of people wait for someone else to ask them if they're looking at the Q&As or whatever it might be. But it's to actually reach out and take action and, you know, take a bit of ownership for where you're at, but actually ask the questions and seek a bit of advice. And don't be afraid to get your biases challenged maybe that little bit more when you do ask them.
Love it. That's call to action for today. Check out your own limiting beliefs. Challenge those. Bring awareness to them. And as you said, Larry, I think that there's so much in this podcast. I can't wait to listen back to it myself. Just because you said some stuff there between what you said and what Kate said, I'm like, oh, I'm definitely going to be taking that. I give you credit. Definitely. I'll tag you across when I steal it. To be fair, I'm good with that. But mate, I really appreciate this. Thanks for dropping all the knowledge bombs, for sharing all the value for everyone listening. And everything Larry mentioned there, his Instagram, the podcast, the website, they will be in the show notes on briankeenfitness.com and in the description wherever you are listening to podcasts. Larry, thank you so much again.
Mate, it's been a great chat. Thank you.
There you have it. Larry Doyle on bullshit-free solutions to weight loss challenges. love this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I enjoyed recording it. As always, if you did, take a screenshot of today's episode, post it on your Instagram stories, and you can tag both Larry and I. I'm Brian_Keen_fitness on Instagram, and Larry's Larry_Doyle. If this is your first time listening to the podcast and you enjoyed today's episode, hit that follow or subscribe button for episodes coming every single Monday, and catch you all next week.